Yeah, no, we'll take decisions quickly. Take decisions quickly. I know, and I'll form coalition. Yes, sir. Like how long? Half an hour. Or it should be about half past. So you end up yesterday. But not tonight, but what time did you come? But you have to judge. But I don't see that thing on that, right? Good morning, honorable members, and welcome to our portfolio committee meeting, and we also welcome the departments. We thought that we should keep the APP as being tabled. You know that it's our mandate now to talk to it. So the department is here to present the APP and the strategic plan, so that we must engage with it as the honorable members of this parliament. Now, I won't waste any time. I will now ask the department to go straight into their presentation. I think we know each other already. No, some of that you don't know. No, they know you. Okay. Over to you. I don't know who's leading the delegation. Oh, honorable.
Good morning to honorable members. Good morning. So if we may, we do have Mr. Rampele, our planning director, who will do the presentation. But first, an apology from the acting DG, Dr. Kuluga. He's another engagement this week. Thank you. So without further ado, Mr. Rampelli.
Thank you, General. Good morning, honorable members. Let me take this opportunity to thank you as I'm going to present the Department of Military Veterans annual performance plan, which was tabled on the 9th of March this year. Without any waste of time, as the honorable chairperson has indicated, we'll go straight to the presentation. When you go to slide number 2, it's about the layout. But I want to say that out of this presentation, under part A, we have got updated situation analysis, that is layout number 3. That is where we explain the situation of how we performed in the previous financial year in the current APP. And then we have also the organizational environment, and then the revisions of the legislative and other mandates. We know that you have got the Military Veterans Act, and the regulation is part of our mandate that we need to revise that. And then the next slide number 3, we are going to give the budget allocation for the department. As you can see, have the financial allocation for the current financial year in terms of the programs, program 1, 2, 3. In terms of the need, the what called the benefits, also we have allocated, as you will see, as from slide number 26 until slide number 31. And then we are also going to show the core performance information in terms of the indicators that we have allocated ourselves for this year, and some of the changes that might be happening within these indicators, as we are always guided by what we are having in our past. And then slide number 4, about the aim and introduction, as indicated, we are going to present the overview outlook of this APP as tables, and then this was aligned to the National Treasury Framework. There is a framework from National Treasury, and also it's aligned to our 5-year plan, the DLV strategic plan. And the vision and the mission, I believe, this one we are all aware of, and then the legislative mandate that we have considered when we were drafting the APP are as follows: the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the PFMA, and the others, also including the Military Veterans Act that governs us. And then in terms of the slide number 8, the updated situation analysis in the APP, we are saying when we were drafting the document, we took cognizance of this as a guideline, because they are part and parcel of the mandate that has been given to us. But firstly, we have considered the executive authority, meaning the minister's priorities, the NDP as our bible, the outcomes, as we know, and then the foresight, they got an implementation plan that must be done by all the departments, and then the achievement as a department that we have also considered in drafting the document. And the other thing is the M part, as you know. All these have been considered in the drafting of the APP. Now, we considered the executive authority in terms of the 8 priorities that what happened last year as part of the situation analysis. So in terms of priority number 1, we indicated that by the end of March last year, our staff complement was 131. In terms of priority number 2, that deals with SRD, meaning social relief of defense. Here is the number of military veterans that were given the support. In terms of priority number 3, is a comprehensive support to military veterans in terms of the health care, the health access, the education and training, the facilitation of internment, placement, the facilitation of advice to business opportunities, the public transport, housing, burial support. All these are the comprehensive benefits that fall within that priority. So, we can go back just a bit on that one. In terms of health care and wellness center, we know that we are still in discussion with the Department of Public Works for finalization of that wellness center. And then the health support that were given to military veterans. This is the previous year in terms of our performance. And then in terms of education, training and skills, is a bone of contention, so to say, because that is where the livelihood of our military veterans needs to be taken into consideration. So they were about 2,150, and then they were broken down according to the numbers as they are indicated, 1,000 short of on assisting skills for development in terms of the training, and then we have about 188 who are trained on cooperatives, and then we have got about 240 who received a variety of training on short courses, and then about 60, I'm just quoting there, and to say 60 were equipped with driving skills. And then the next slide, under facilitation of employment, they're saying 1,796 access job opportunities as follows. 450 under the Department of Health Affairs. In fact, it's no longer what I've heard, it's water and sanitation. Pumalanga were placed on construction. And then during the roadshow, this is the number that were reached for exposing the military veterans in terms of payments activities. And then we have got also 12 military veterans who were recruited in our head office, also in the HIV division. Like in my case, in my division, I've got one military veterans. So they're also given opportunities for working. Continue on page number 3. We're on business advice. Through the ESM headed by Mr. Jacobs, about 96 properties were registered for the benefit of the military veterans. And then in terms of the public transport, we must indicate that there's a slow progress, but I realize that this year, 2017, there's going to be an agreement in terms of making sure that the military veterans do enjoy this benefit. Housing, we, as you know, that we depend on the Department of Human Settlement. I believe this year is going to be a different phase altogether in terms of operation, in terms of acceding to this, so that military veterans have got access that we can even indicate to the honourable members that by this 15-16, almost 134 military veterans have been given the houses, so which in terms of the progress we can say is a good progress, because it's a bit of a challenge. And then in terms of the houses that were repossessed, about 9 houses belonging to the military veterans were rescued by being repossessed by the feds, which is a good thing. And then this year, 15-16, we've got 16, if I'm not mistaken, that were also repossessed from the bank institution back to the military veterans. The burial support for the previous year, that 160 were supported, the families of the deceased military veterans were supported. In terms of pension, there's a framework to this end, but there's also an action that has been done to those that qualify for pension that has been given to the military veterans. Now, in terms of empowerment, we are saying priority number 4, all these are under the executive authority priorities, meaning the minister's priorities. So 74 new service providers providing skills for military veterans, and also on the database for military, about 24 were registered in the database. And then in terms of priority number 5, the heritage and memorialization, is that the DMV is in discussion with Department of Public Works for the wall of remembrance in Kampala, meaning in Uganda, so there's a discussion to that effect so that it can be finalized. And then priority number 6, in terms of strengthening governance and oversight, is that we are aware that in the department we have the SANBA, we have got the Advisory Council Appeals Board, so all these things are now operational in terms of this priority. And then version number 7 is about the most contentious challenge, the military veterans database, which at the moment, this is what we can provide to say those that came to verify for the records, but there's an improvement in terms of this in this priority as we are going to outline in terms of what we have planned for this 16-17. And the last one is about the communication or the marketing strategy for the department, although it may sound as if the department is not visible, but there are ways and means that we are making, we are rolling out to make sure that the department is visible in terms of the Facebook, the Twitter, although the ornament has been suspended, but I believe somehow even in the electronic media, there is some talk about the military veterans. Now, in terms of the contribution to the NDP, which is environment, is a prerequisite, in terms of chapter 3 under economy and environment, this is what we have learned as a department to say we need to facilitate employment of community veterans by exposing them to all various types of work that they are good at. And then under chapter 8 of the NDP, in terms of human settlement that we are partnering with DHS, we for 16-17 the target is 1,000. And then in terms of chapter 9 of the NDP, in terms of improving education, training and innovation, we know that we are providing bursary assistance to close to 3,650, but for 2017 is around 4,000 that we have plans to assist. And in terms of promoting health in partnership with firms, this is what we are doing. And cumulatively, as we speak, for 2017, we have targeted 14,500. Under social protection, chapter 11 of the NDP, this is what we have said that we will do, even if there are some challenges there and there, but there is a process, there is a way to say how can we make sure that the military veterans are supported in terms of the social support. Under chapter 13, we are talking about in this case we are talking about the department as a whole in terms of the staff complement to say from the top until to the lower level, that if possible all posts are filled so that the work can start in an excellent way. And in terms of promoting accountability and fighting corruption, which is what we want to make sure that the procurement process in the department is transparent and in line with government legislation so that nothing is done behind closed doors. Now, the last chapter 50 of the NDP in terms of DMVs is that we, through the activities that we are engaging in the department, we are trying by all means to make sure that we correct all the wrongs that were done in the past through provision of empowerment to military veterans so that they also engage with the families. Now, in terms of the improvement plan, I spoke about the impact. You know, we have got the activities that we have aligned ourselves in terms of the KPS, the key performance areas that are in the MPAT. And the aim is that within those levels, we are always at level number 4, but it is a challenge, especially that when colleagues, when you work with them, so you make sure that they adhere to what is indicated in the KPA for those requirements that are required. So for this 16-17 fiscal year, if I go to the last one, the non-payment of suppliers, even those that are military veterans within the database, which is a requirement from Treasury and also from PFMA to make sure that within 30 days these suppliers are paid what is due to them, which is a challenge we must say. We are not going to say that we are 100% on there. And then in terms of the first part implementation plan, where the Director Generals have a sitting, we are making sure that the Attorney Officer's performance agreement is submitted on time through the processes until it is admitted to the Office of Public Service Commission. And then the other thing is that all cases of national anti-corruption are reported, especially those that are linked to military veterans. And then and those cases, when they are reported within the stipulated period, they are addressed to. And then the other plan is that under the current status is that we want to continue to obtain, as we obtain an unqualified audit of opinion, we want to see it going further, going to a clean, even if the word clean usually is not accepted, but that is the aim and the goal that we want to see ourselves. And then the other plan for is the financial disclosures of the senior managers. Fortunately, it has been done electronically, so this is done faster and everybody is doing that. And then the other point that was said earlier on in terms of empathy is still repeated here about the 30-day payment to suppliers, which we are pushing ourselves to make sure that happens drastically. Now, this is the 2010 structure of the department, which is still in the process of being reviewed, and I believe not long the submission will be brought to say we have reviewed the structure in terms of from the top head, from the top management until to the office food soldiers, so that it covers everyone. And then this is another mandate that we have been given for 2017 to say the Military Veterans Act needs to be amended, which was the process that has been followed, but I believe during the course of the year this will be given an update to the honorable members to say this is what we have done, the amendments, the act, and also the regulation, because you remember there was a challenge of the inclusion of the beneficiary or the dependents in those documents. Now, overall for 2017, this is our strategic objective to say, for this 2017 we have put ourselves on this to say, we want to recognize and honor the lives of the military veterans. We want to ensure that there is a seamless transition of military veterans from active military service to civilian life, so that they enjoy these benefits, and the other thing is to restore their dignity, is to improve their quality of life in terms of those benefits, you know, and not only military veterans and also the dependents, and then to provide also the comprehensive delivery system of benefits, and to ensure that they also contribute to the enhancement of the prosperity of the country, and the last one, contribute to the reconciliation nation building in terms of memorialization, that we need to do that as a matter of agency. The department is composed of three programs which are under, we all know them, three programs, administration, socio-economic support, and ESM, the purpose and the sub-program that are there. And then slide number 25 is about the financial allocation for this current financial year, 2017. That we have put in the MSF budget to see program 1 for 2017, our own concentrate on the first column. That has been allocated, that's 1,143,000, and the total budget for this current year is 597.6 million. Now, in terms of the economic classification, under compensation for that amount, this is the pie, or this is the size that COE will get, 102, goods and services, transfer and subsidies, and then payment of capital, the breakdown is 297, as it corresponded with the previous slide. And then slide 28, we try to break it down in terms of the program. To say program 1, it has got 2, 4, 6 sub-programs. So this management, that is from the office of the AODG, they have been allocated 8 million. Corporate services under DG, they have been allocated 51. Finance, 18 million. Internal audit, 16. Strategic policy and MME is 21. Office accommodation is 28. All in all is 143 for program 1. Program 2, then there's the program purpose, and then the sub-program. The first sub-program has been allocated as follows. Data and benefits, 11 million. Healthcare is 6 million. Socio-economic support is 226. The total amount is 294 million allocated for this program. Program 3, ESM, with the three sub-program. The first one, provincial offices, 44 million. Employment and skills, 100 million. Heritage burial is 41, and all is 159. Now, this is the summary of those slides that I read earlier on to say COE is 102, goods and services, minimum operational cost is 138, benefits in sales and ESM 349, capital assets 6M, and then the total amount is 597 million. Now, in terms of the indicators that we have included them in the E&E, that is with National Treasury, they have not changed because it's the same benefits. The only thing that might have changed there was the target, because usually you set the target being informed by the resources that we are having. So this is what we have set ourselves. The healthcare, as I said earlier on, for 2017 is 14,000, and remember this cumulative. And then we've got housing is 1,000. Memorial site, it is still the plan 2. Training and skills, 3.5, and then the partnership that we want to form with the private sector and organ of state is 60. Now, this is just the summary of the spending focus for 2017, how that money will be spent in terms of the two service delivery programs. Now, on slide 36, we have indicated the strategic objective to say for program one. The overall strategic objective to say is to provide direction to the department and the objective statement and the baseline, meaning the previous year, what is the baseline. And then thereafter, we are indicating all the 11 indicators that are in program one, and they have not changed. It's only indicator number, this indicator 105, approved MPAT improvement plan. Remember, in terms of the requirement, we also need to indicate how many meetings do we conduct to make sure that we monitor the activities that are in the MPAT. So we are advised by DDME and also Treasury to say you need to use that as an indicator. And then thereafter, the one that I was talking about, performance indicator, which is also critical, is about PPI 110% of signed performance agreements submitted to HRM by senior managers. That's the target that we have set for ourselves, and then thereafter, the last one, percentage of legitimate invoice paid within 30 days. As you know, that in terms of PFMA, we need to pay our suppliers within 30 days. And then we go to program two. It says, slide number 40, it was set the strategic objective. All these objectives are aligned to the five-year plan so that they talk to each other. We've got two strategic objectives and then also the baseline that we've set for ourselves of what happened previously. So this is the information that is also contained in the five-year plan. And then the indicators for sales. Although we know that you've got more than 8-9 miscellaneous that are aligned to this program, but we only selected, although in the executive authority priorities, all benefits are outlined. Let me report, most of them are also covered there, so don't be surprised when you see why do you have five indicators, not more than that correlate with the benefits that you are dispensed under social economic support. So it is still the same indicators, housing, health, and then bursaries that we provide, counseling that we provide to military veterans. And then the other slide that follows is about ESM. Also, the strategic objective, as I mentioned earlier on, that it corresponds with the strategic plan, so that the two governments speak the same language. Now, the indicators for what you call for ESM. The first one is linked to what we have included in the E&E, the partnership that we want to see ourselves entering into with the private sector and organ state. The other thing is the training and skills development, that's PI number two, and then business opportunities that we are also planning. It also includes the cooperatives inside there, and then the continental and internal levels in terms of the agreements, that's the target. And then the peer support, although somebody was saying, how do you plan for sparing, but because this money that's allocated to this indicator, it was so that we need to include it in the, as part of. And then the last one is the memorial right that we have indicated that it is two for this current financial year. In conclusion, honorable members, it is believed that this strategic budgeting will provide or will give us as a department the mandate to deliver the policies that have been allocated to military veterans, and we can only do this through cooperation and in Africa and celebration from working with the members here. And I thank you.
We won't clap hands for you now. We'll do that when you come back and report to us that you have achieved. We promise you that. And honorable members, can you engage the presentation. Tissue. It was what? Any points of clarity? Any contributions? Honorable Sir?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Very good day to everybody and to the department. Honorable Chair, I think there's a number of issues that we have today, issues for clarity. One is that we are engaging today in the APP and the SP going forward in the new year, and a task team was established in the department, a turnaround task team that's supposed to have given effect to a number of changes, and particularly addressing the issue of impact and the findings of impact and audit findings that they had to address. So going into the new, I don't actually see that in the document, and we were not briefed and received the report on impact from the turnaround strategy itself. So that has been on the agenda, been off the agenda, on the agenda, off. Similarly, we are engaging in this discussion, and we did not receive also the fourth quarterly report that's supposed to have given an update of information that has been executed at the end of March of this current year, which would have put us in a better position to then discuss the issue going forward. At this moment, we depend on information from the third quarter of last year, and of course, that information reflects very badly on this department of a dismal performance in terms of its targets that set for the various programs and sub-programs and so on. So I think that first two issues needs to be cleared up, what happened to those particular issues. Then, of course, the issue that we have also is one, that there's a serious concern regarding all these problems and a lot of it rests on the internal controls and moreover the internal audit that's supposed to give more structure and guidance and the M&E, monitoring and evaluation of this department. The internal audit has three persons. I note also gladly that it's an increase in the budget for that particular unit and we'd like to know what exactly is going to be done with the additional monies for the internal audit to function more optimally and to keep this department in check and also to improve the audit findings going ahead for the new year. That's another comment that we'd like to know more details about. One other one is the leadership of this organization. The DG, I see here written on the front of my page, the acting DG, Dr. S. M. Gulubi. Now that DG I know is our Secretary of Trade, isn't it? If that is the same person, then this reflects very badly on this department that people have been appointed, they've been acting people in this capacity, and it seems that there is a serious problem with the leadership in this organization and giving guidance to the entire organization as well. So I've got a problem. The CFO, I'm glad that that has been now an official appointment, and that is stable. And that's very important. Next to any DG, you need a good CFO to see that things function. And it's just that the CFO has been new appointed, and he's got the huge task on hand. And we'll definitely appraise him of the situation if the department doesn't do so. But certainly there's a lot of work to be done to bring this department on par and also to make it perform. This department, Honorable Chair, is very ambitious. I like the spirit that they pitch themselves at level 4 and beyond level 4 of impact. It's great to have great ambitions, but we have to be realistic. The DoD has sent in its even Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of Defense is very, very cautious when he speaks about impact. He says, our performance was 2.6, next year we're looking at 2.8. The following year at 3. We're not even striving for 4. But this department performs at 1, and over the last 3 years, less than 2, and then it pitches itself beyond 4, which is of course the highest you can go is 4, so they want to outperform even 4. I don't think that performance is realistic. I think we have to be very realistic when we pitch those levels and the capacity that we have within our structures. The strategic objective is also that we establish in our ranks people of experience and expertise. Now that we know has been compromised in this department. People have been appointed to jobs that are not fit to do the jobs. And now we've got a skills audit, which we still need explanation about, Honorable Chair. We asked for that information now for months about the skills audit. We have not received a reply yet.
And that is of course include RPLs, because many of the members that are working within the DNB are also former military veterans. They may not have the necessary qualifications, but they will have RPL experience, but we need to know what exactly has transpired and how these people have been put into positions that they qualify to do such a job. Because the job being done reflects clearly on the performance of the previous 2 years where we had underspending taking place. Huge underspending. Now we can blame other departments because of the MOUs and SLAs that are not in place or not effective. Yes, that falls under particularly under Program 2. And it's a concern for all of us, but then one is to drive that. And I find that the policy under the Program 1, policy, MNE, and all those important instruments that regulate the environment, that budget has been reduced. So when that budget is reduced, who is actually sitting on the MOUs and SALs and policies and all the changes that can happen? And then I find the legislation is envisaged to be changed. Why? We say it is to accommodate the dependence. At this moment, the figures have been going up and down between 20,200 and 21,300 of people that have been verified out of the 57.32, it's now 57,400. Sometimes 58,000. So whatever it is, 21,000 and 58,000. All of that stuff, 21,000, we find that if we look at the projections in this presentation, we're looking at 17,000 that will access, for instance, healthcare. Only 5,000 by 2020, the end of that financial year. Only 5,000. So what we are saying is, how do we assess that those numbers, I mean, in terms of the budget, yes, we can predict that we can accommodate that. But are the people that will receive it the most deserving people of the military veterans? Because the database remains a serious problem, and the database budget has been cut. Nobody has said people have been now, used in that particular area, and with a projection of 85% achievement. They've never achieved that, Honorable Chair. Over the last 4 or 5 years, there's been no target set, realistic target for this department to reach that. It is at 37%. They're projecting 85%. But the conclusion of this will only be 1920 financial year, that this database will only be finished. So what I'm effectively saying is that so many people are being deprived of their benefits, which they justifiably, of course, qualify for. There are many of them on the street that I meet, that I know, and I've gone to see the conditions personally, that qualify for this, but because they are kept off the database, they will not benefit. Now we're speaking about changing the Military Veterans Act, changing the regulations, and only the dependents of those who have been verified that have got on, they will continue to benefit. So few people will benefit the most out of this, and the vast majority of 63% of the current database will still be denied access to that effort. 63% at a time. And we call that now, we are giving due consideration to all the military debt. In fact, if I reach page 24, and it really, this first 24, is it 24? Slide, no, what is the wrong one? 23. Slide 23 says, memorializing in death. Now, I've been reporting to Mr. Jacobs, I've been phoning the department, there are military veterans that have died that have not been seen to up to today. And they will continue to die, and they will continue to suffer, because there is no serious consideration to deal with their matters expedient to get the job done. And their families still are in debt, and they still continue to suffer. So do we really memorialize them? We actually cause them to suffer more. We speak about seamless transition. The seamless transition is not realistic. If it was realistic, we would have had all the military veterans on the database and tell them, you qualify and you don't qualify. And we must be brave enough to do that and have a political will to tell people if they qualify or if they don't qualify. But we keep them off the list. We improve the quality of military veterans and that of the dependents. That only goes for a small group. At this moment, it's out of the 37% of the 58,000. So who are really benefiting from this? Not military veterans, the majority of them are suffering. We speak about reconciliation and nation building. Certainly this has caused problems for us on the ground. We had a number of protests by military veterans. We had the occupation of homes by military veterans to express their anger and their disillusionment. And how do we respond to that? So there's a serious problem coming also to the communication and marketing of this department. That budget has also been cut. We know the extent of it, but today still I was in arms 40 and I've owned the department also. I'm standing at military veterans' homes. Many people out there, that's not even rural, have not received the message. They do not know what the benefits are. They do not have access to computers and to internet. How do we get information? How do we get to local government? How do we get to the real local newspapers and the local radio stations to broadcast the information that military veterans need to know in order that they can access the benefits? That's the whole objective, is that the poorest of the poor must be able to know what benefits are available. I don't believe the current communication strategy is effective enough, because as I'm still going around to the townships again, I still find a lack of information being available to those people. So I've got those concerns on the chair. I want to also raise the, of course, the NS disclosures, the 100% indication there, and under circumstances I assume that will be the case because certain the DG has not been appointed yet. So we will wait for that. The CFO most likely has signed, has been in the position now for a few months. The other one, of course, is what I don't find in this document. When you speak about we're going to have strategic objectives, what we plan to do this after this coming year is good, but what measures have really been introduced in this period? We wanted to know that. I know plans are going to be made for the future year and the speech of the year ahead, but if they have, and that's why the fourth quarter reports have told us what measures already have been introduced by the turnaround team in the department, so we would have seen those things continuing being rolled out. So the database, and of course when we speak about the risk, apparently everybody's looking for the risk in the document. The risk page has disappeared. So the assumption is either the department is at risk or the risk page is missing. So the department can find out in a deal, but there was a special page every single year that talked about high risk and medium risk. And sometimes it was just classified as risk. Those risks are not listed, but the risks are known to us. Whether it is the HR list that we have and competency of people in the department, that was one of the serious threats to the department itself. The other one, of course, was the issue of the ICT. Now, the ICT here is speaking to them that it's going to be an understanding with CETA, that is our government department responsible for the IT. And also all the programs that run transversely in government. Now we know that DOD itself has problems, and not only DOD, a number of other departments with CETA. So obviously the CETA is the best partner in this arrangement to deal with the current situation. And how far is this project of the ICT? What exactly is CETA going to do with this department, at what cost? Because CETA doesn't come free of charge. So we'd like to know exactly, we're supposed to have another CETA presentation next week, Honorable Chair, that is scheduled for next week. That's outstanding, so we hope to have some more detailed information from CETA about this arrangement. So that is the other risk that we have. The, of course, the other risk that we also have is ICT, is the HR. It was also the strategic management that we had a problem with. Strategic management and leadership by the department, and I hope that will change now for the better. But we still have a DG that's not been appointed. So that was always the problem, and which has led also to other problems in this department. Of course, we know that our case of the SIU has been disbanded because the previous CFO felt he was threatened, and there was a case apparently on that issue. The other case of litigation, which the department is handling, Honorable Chair, is the one of Z-Health. We've not been a place to date. I don't want to ask about the merit of the case. But I know that this is there, that a number of doctors and practitioners and nurses and psychologists and psychiatrists, it was a multi-million rand contract that was given to Z-Health. That has gone sour, and Z-Health has even told us, we don't get involved, that's between the department and Z-Health. What we'd like to know is, we'd just like to know what's the status of that issue between Z-Health and this department, and if it's in the courts, so we're not going to subjudicate the matter, I'm not going to ask about the merits of the case, but let's notice where we are with this case. And this case has caused problems because a number of the local medical practitioners cannot now extend health care to the military veterans. And they are now forced to commute and travel by taxi, by bus, by train, to try to get to the main centers to add some basic health care. That is a challenge, and they don't have money to do it. Whereas they could have gone under the Zero Health arrangement to a local practitioner, which had to be reimbursed. But that department needs to explain how that just status, the merits of the case, we're not going to pursue. That is another matter. So those are the other litigation that is also going to be a problem. And the history of our defense and is problematic, that the cases they're looking at 50% success rate. So if we look at success rate within defense, and of course the capacity within DMV for case handling cases, we have a problem. That this may cost the department a lot of money. And we don't have the luxury of having money to just spend on cases. We need to spend it on military veterans and their needs. Regarding the SCM policy, I see this preferential procurement policy that's going to be written for that. I think we would like to have sight and be also briefed on that particular matter. And of course, going ahead, we know that certain companies did receive contracts from this department, and we will normally ask, who are the military vets that received it? Who are they? Where are they from? Which form of formation do they belong to? Is it being adjudicated fairly so that military vets are really in need and deserving, they actually get the major benefit of the money that is being allocated to this department. The issue is that burial is not a new indicator. Burial has been coming on for a number of years now, about the third year already, and this is the fourth year that has been done before. It's indicated in our APP as new indicator. It is not. We're projecting now 200. Similarly, we find that the issue of the payment of invoices, that is not a new indicator, that's an old indicator. And of course, we know 90% that is being reached. Given the department's capacity, we hope that can be improved, but the department clearly specifies legitimate invoices. Now, what do you mean by legitimate? And how many of last year's invoices were actually illegitimate? And if it's illegitimate, it means it is pending invoices, and therefore you have funds that will be carried over to deal with that contingency, because once your illegitimate invoices are legitimized, then you need to make payment. Or you have to decline payment if people don't meet all the requirements. So there needs to be funds that's reflected in the budget, which of course I didn't see. Maybe it's not reflected the details of it, but that is not clear. The other one, Honorable Chair, is the same thing. It's a mention of about 1,700 people that have been employed and recruited or placed by the department. I didn't see specifically the relationship also with DAF. And there were a number of APLA and MK members that were appointed to that project in Ilanspaai, and they were actually executing the job in Hermanus. Now that is not reflected in this report. I expect that to be also included. So if there are all the MOUs and things that are existing and jobs have been allocated by the department that we have relationships with, that those are clearly mentioned, and also the people that have been deployed to those particular departments through a particular task. The amendments, again, we would like to have sight of the amendments of the Act and also of the regulation, exactly what it includes, because I do understand why the Act will have to be changed, because in the Act only two of the benefits dependents can actually benefit from. So there has to be a change in the Act. But when we do that, I think from our side here, we need to discuss, why do we change the status of the military veteran, include all the dependents, where there's not even enough money for the current military veterans alone, and that we have only 37% that are verified that are benefiting, and we're including now another database of dependents, which will then take away more money, and more will go to the 37%, and our 63% will even suffer more. So I see this clear indication, which I would like to have an explanation from the department, why has the medical healthcare been increased by 18 million, and what is that going to be done about it? Because the beneficiaries have only increased by 600. By 13,900, it increases to 14,500. Now, what is the 18 million exactly for? Why that increase? And the other section we find is all decreased. So, medical special indication. And of course, we are looking at how is this being positioned in terms of the NHI, the National Health Initiative. Where does the department plug into that program in the future? Or will this remain a separate budget? And will military veterans then operate on a separate medical scheme like we have currently, or will they be incorporated into the NHI? Rewards formation, I'm quite interested in the number of work that's been created for people that come in the department, and also the speed of delivery that we are concerned with, that is happening. And going forward, that there's a willingness from many other departments has been engaged as department to create work opportunities for military veterans. So I think that is a very positive for this department. It's just that we like always be appraised of who the beneficiaries are. Who are the people that's always getting the dogs? But we like to encourage all military veterans that are deserving that they be accommodated. The issue of compensation, I think the money has been allocated to about 58 people. And going ahead, that is also a problem. People that have been soldiers, that have horse numbers, that have suffered injury and trauma, because they're not verified on the new national database, they are denied compensation. So there are people that are suffering out there, they are disabled, they have other, besides just the injury, the wounds that have scarred their whole life and families. I think the department needs to address those issues immediately. Because those are people not only with difficulty, but also just moving about and dealing with life itself has become a huge burden and a problem. So I just want to have that more sensitivity to it. Public transport is one of the areas which I find the department wants to replace with another indicator, and that is about the counseling. Put that indicator in transport out because we've not been successful. Transport is actually a very important means to access work. So that should be when you need education, training, skills, getting around the job, getting casual job, whatever, transport becomes essential. So if we can at least secure that arrangement with the department and that military veterans that qualify for that service, that they can actually get on a train every day or a bus and to actually go and find work. At this moment they are stuck out in all different areas, distant from cities, and they can't even reach the cities. And work generally in rural areas are far less than work within the cities. So if we don't create the access or the means to it, we are also not playing our role of providing the means to a great end. So I think the department needs to speed up the relationship between itself and the Department of Transport. We cannot accept that this thing is delayed, it's been on the course for the last 3 years, nothing has happened, zero has happened. And if the department is not coming, the president is the veteran-in-chief of military base. Then the president has to engage the Minister of Transport. We cannot accept that military veterans are denied that. I mean, we are speaking about it, but we need to act upon that.
I'm going to ask you, Teresa, it should be one day like we are hearing another presentation.
No, I'm raising issues. Right. The military pension for issues, another one that I'm raising issues with it. Military pension assistance
groups with the treasury would like to have an update. And of course, one of the key issues people complain about is, if you have a military pension, that means at least you've got an income. You don't have to pay for an SRV, which is a SASA voucher, to get food every month. So why has this not been made a priority? If you look at all the other services, it means certain individuals who are qualifying as one qualifying. If it comes to the military pension, we'd like to know, would that be how, of course, we only have 25 members that will qualify, and if that can be expedited so that people have at least some income, and that is a better income than the current grant or state pension that's been issued. Now, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Self. Any other inputs from the Honorable Members? Honorable Gamede?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Honorable Israel has taken about 82 of my questions. I'm only left with one. The only question I have is on your slide 38, you target 90% for payment of invoices within 30 days. And it's not only for this financial year, even
throughout Thailand. Would you think this is okay and fair? Why not 100%? Because this one is probably within your department. You don't rely on anyone else except yourself. It's something that you can achieve. So why would you for 3 years really target 90% and not 100% for payment of invoices?
Right. That is the 30 days payment.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, let's start with that one. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Mali.
Thank you, honorable members. Likely enough, the complement of the department has now grown to an extent that, I mean, at least all of us have been taking notes. But I think I will talk to the generality in terms of some of the matters that have been raised, either as questions or as comments. I think the first part which was raised was the meeting that is still outstanding for us to come and officially do a presentation with the turnaround support initiative. So we will await this August meeting to then schedule it for us, just, I mean, then if I pick up what has been just said, is like some of the issues should have happened previously. So we've been ready, and we're still ready. Then as soon as every other maybe technical detail has been sorted, we will avail ourselves with Mr. Matombos, who is with us here. And we can then, without having to say quite a lot, he is now sitting even in the ESCO with the department, so that is, I mean, some of these issues that have been a challenge for the department addressed, and we can then exchange ideas on that. Same thing that would happen with the quarterly report, it's just been recently submitted, and I think as soon as the date is available, we will be able to bring this so that it can be presented as well. On the issue of leadership, this is being addressed, that we must indicate. And Honorable Issa has noted, we now have Dr. Mahapa in the socioeconomic support as the branch head. And still we have corporate services. We have the CFO. I believe very, very soon the TDC, ESM, will be appointed, as well as the one that has been raised. Interviews are taking place, so we are expecting that, I mean, in terms of what the minister has committed herself to ensure that by no later than the end of this month, a DG should be appointed for the department, so that at least, I mean, his ability is brought, so that at least then the team can be fully fledged and effected. And I've spoken to those three matters. I think when we come to the issues of internal control, luckily enough, we do have our head of internal audit, and Sue will then speak to that. We did speak of indicating that, I mean, we did not highlight issues of risk in our presentation, but those are in the major document, in the main body and document. So we just felt that, I mean, what we were trying to do was to bring the major highlights onto the fore. The issue of ICT is being attended as well at the departmental level, and hopefully we should be able to roll out. Yes, we are aware of the hiccups with the issues of CETA, but in certain instances, we will be, it's a dual thing. That which CETA we feel that CETA is good at, we will move with the CETA. That which we feel that the department can look at other alternatives, we will address that as well. You had spoken of a skills audit. I'm not certain as to whether the document was then sent through to this committee, but as soon as we return back into the office, we'll follow up so that there is a document is then brought through, which was part of the issues of the risk that had been raised here. On the other matters, I think I would look at some of the issues. We have spoken of the communication strategy. We will look at that, but I can firmly say that at the ESCO level, we have already indicated that we as a department ourselves, despite the human resource capacity that we do have, we will be doing roadshows ourselves so that at least we can then reach all the far-flung areas without having to impede on the roadshows for the deputy minister, because we've taken note that we are not reaching our stakeholder in the way that we should. So that is something that is being dealt with at our level as ESCO. You've spoken of the status of Zil. I must indicate, yes, this is now in the works. We are expecting that a resolution and finalization should be found by no later than the end of this month. And the rest, I will look at the CFO procurement policy, 30-day exception, he will do to us. So he made some people's notes on that one. So I think I will request the colleagues to speak to those that are within their direct domains. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I'll first speak to the issue that was raised regarding the Rashkaro Energy included in the APT. If you look at the strategic document, most of our strategic risks are included in the 5-year strategic plan. And the operational risk is a comprehensive list of operational risks within the department. And in terms of a budget regarding the internal audit, the plan was to ensure that we capacitate internal audit. As we said currently, the structure is only comprised of 3 members, 1 responsible for risk and 2 for internal audit. And in terms of the budget that was allocated, we look at the DNE. This was mainly based on the recommendation of requesting service providers to assist the unit and the department to ensure that we have an operations in audit and a capacitation of internal audit. This was mainly for a period of 2 years contract, and this never continued, but there's a plan in place to ensure that we capacitate the internal audit going forward to ensure that it assists with assisting the department with internal control measures so that the impact requirements are achieved. Thank you.
Hi, Jeff. In response to the finance-related letter, I would like to tackle the illegitimate invoices statement. Basically, the challenge at the moment is mainly related to our travel agent, which is TWS. Due to the fact that we use a manual system, there is and the continuous challenge in terms of them duplicating invoices, and that's why we mean by illegitimate invoices. But we hope that very soon we will use the system, which is Logis, which will help us track payments and creation of orders in a systematized way. So basically we will eliminate the risk of duplications. In terms of the 90-day payment invoices, I must admit 90% Honorable Kamede is correct. It is light, but knowing very well where we come from, and we thought it is safer to use 90% as a benchmark. I will prefer to give you stats. In January the facility was at 60%. And then we saw a drastic improvement in February up to 93%. And 96% in March. So we believe that 90% is safe to start with, but obviously we can always improve on it to be correct. In terms of preferential procurement, I would like to hand over to Mr. Jacobs on my right, because procurement is part of my domain, as well as he plays a role as well, because it's part of skills development and business development. So basically, between the two of us, we will have to find synergy in terms of how to optimize in terms of preferential procurement.
Thank you, Chair. To quickly pick up on the differential procurement, what we do practice in the department is all military reference companies are captured on a database, and we do have a database at the moment of at least 134 companies that are registered as companies owned by military veterans. Those companies will then, from our own internal register, we transfer them onto supply chain. So all of those companies have put in a supply chain database form, and they are captured on the record as companies owned by military veterans. And as we speak now, with all of our procurement that we go out and do, we do involve military veterans. We invite them when we make when we do procurement for different services in the department. We do realize, however, that we also need to provide some training for our military veterans, because not all of them are au fait with the documentation that is required, processes, and even the costing for the services that are required. So with the CFO, there already has been agreement that we will run supply chain and procurement workshops for military veterans, so that they have a very good understanding of especially those SBD documents and how they need to be filled in and how you need to cost effectively, so that we can begin to provide them with much more percentage in terms of procurement in the department. So definitely we do include them at this particular point in time. I'll pause there for CFO to continue, and then I'll pick up on the other matters.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. I think Mr. Jacobs has covered all the elements in terms of supply chain, but all I can add, currently we have an annual data bank system, which actually limits us in terms of entering proper rotation of suppliers. Again, by using Logis, we will be in a good position to ensure that there is proper rotation in terms of vendor management and usage. Thank you so much.
Chair, I'm going to come up again, and I'm going to pick up on the matters relating to memorialization, and I'm going to leave it with burial. And yes, the challenges that we have experienced is that we haven't been able to pay for all military veterans who have passed on. There are quite a large number of military veterans who do not appear on the database, and so we are beginning to move to capture members on the database, and with the new DG in place, we are finding that we begin to get lots more assistance in the system. With any burials that are with any request for burial support that are registered, we are not turning people away, but rather moving into a proactive mode where we are asking them to submit details of the deceased, so that one of the things that we do is at least we engage with the funeral service providers to get a sense of what the costs are, and then we do commitment letters for them to make sure that the dignified funeral takes place. So we try and help out in that regard, but the correctness that comes out of Honorable Issao's statement is that we haven't yet been able to facilitate payment of funding in many instances, and that is in some areas where we haven't been able to fully verify details on databases, and therefore we are moving to try and get that cleared up. Another factor that comes up with burial support is some of the undertakers are operating as entities, but they're not necessarily fully licensed, they don't have VAT numbers and those type of documents. So I can say that there's a company in the Eastern Cape, for example, they've done a reburial for us, and they've done another two funerals for us. And when we contacted him and we said, Baba Mandla, we are sitting with money for you, but you haven't submit a tax clearance certificate to us. So in some instances, the challenge does lie with the entity that we pay, so that becomes a different issue. But with it's a family directly, we're definitely looking at making sure that we help from the database perspective, so that we can move to memorialize in debt and to help them in many instances to have some funding after the funeral to keep them going for a while. To add to this year, in this financial year, we will be moving to do the approval on the headstone so that we can then make sure that their graves are recognizable, where in some instances the graves need to be refurbished, that will happen so that we can extend that component. We are also busy with the policy in conjunction with the Department of Arts and Culture, because when we look at working outside of our borders in similar matters of memorializing, we don't necessarily have a policy that guides us, especially with relates to exhumation and repatriation. The current document is out for wide consultation, and so we're trusting that by the end of this month, with the closure of that, we'll be able to capture the recommendations and have an approved national policy, which we will then put into practice so that we can even do memorialization outside of South Africa's borders, because we still do have many comrades who lie outside of the borders, and we haven't really done anything in any particular way. Honorable Issel, although General Market has pointed to the skills orders and what needs to be done, and that the document will be done in that part, the part that interested me was the RPL component. And with the National School of Government, we are now busy on a process where we're putting together a document on doing RPL for our military veterans, and we want to go into a broader process. We've had a few meetings with the NSG. We've taken a sample and we've gone out to State Security Agency, because we've got lots more military veterans there who relate directly to us. SAPS has done some RPL, so we're looking for reporting from them. The DOD has done some RPL, so we're also looking at feedback from them, so that we also have a database on RPL that has been conducted on military veterans across. But we're busy with the projects that we will present inwardly for approval. We've also met with SAQA on that, so we've been putting the nuts and bolts in place, and when we've got that also well-jowled and approved at EXCO level, we'll also make it presented to portfolio committee so that we can deal with RPL and then make our military veterans more eligible for employment and for access to benefits required. That leads me to the final one I'll deal with, which is on the employment. We also haven't extended the reporting to talk on all the projects. So the matter of the tax project, we would look at including that so that statistics are correctly in place. And then we will also begin to look at adding other projects where military veterans are employed, and also look at presenting spreadsheets and data on the different areas where military veterans have been funded for skill programs in the private training, the electrical sector, the different sectors, so that we are able then to provide names and that way a full database of what we have done in this space. And I think it will help with reporting then going forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. CFO. If I were to ask you the third number that you see on your performance plan, that I will pay all service providers within the targeted period, what percentage would you put on your performance plan?
My benchmark probably will be an average of the last 2 months of the financial year, which is around 92%. I think this will be the safe success number that I will put for now. Because without the automated system
in terms of tracking invoices, which is actually at the moment the facility that we are able to use is novice. We haven't fully implemented that system. So we've got supply chain team going for training at the moment. So we hope to run it out by the 3rd of June.
Honorable Ameda, I'll come back to you in this room.
Yeah, that's an issue, a bone of contention, because we've been speaking about this thing for some time. Because most of the SMMEs are going under because of this late payment. There's been a move that payment of invoices within 30 days should form part of the key performance indicators. Would you then agree that if such happens, even whether it's your bonuses, then it should be measured in terms of those payments?
Yeah, if I may respond to the chair, absolutely, Honorable Kamede. Actually, it should be part of my key performance indicators because it is vital that suppliers are paid on time because it involves cash flow issues and sustainability of their businesses, if I agree.
Now, why don't we put the target is 100%?
We haven't fully rolled out the system which allows this. And this is mainly dependent on the availability of national treasury in terms of training the staff, the supply chain staff members. So the number may be diluted if we use an average of a full year. Rather say then if we were to work starting from a number of at least 92% for the full year, then it may sound reasonable. But to target 100% at the moment, I think we'll be overshooting our target.
Right, okay. Look, this is very important because Parliament also went on a roadshow for that. And the members here, not just committees, members, individual members, are updated with a lot of requests from ordinary members of society to have their services paid for. And now, the policy already is there, I'm not sure it's part of legislation or policy. I will not understand because when a person gives you a service, it's a simple contract. You give, you are obliged to prepare for that. Now, from what you are saying is that you are not digital as a department, because you say your systems should be corrected as a matter of physics. Okay. Honorable Issa, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I would like to have some more comments on the database, Honorable Chair, because I'm not happy that it's set for 2020 to be completed. The target for this country is 85%, and then on the stretch over the next 4 years, the other 15%. So I just need to have what exactly, and also the cutting the budget. I raised a number of cuts in budget and increase in budget, also with the medical, and there was no explanation given. We've offered clarity on those matters, we did not receive clarity. So there's a number of issues I've raised, but I didn't get a response from the department, and I've got about another 5-6 issues I've articulated, just clarity on those ones. Yeah, one for instance, the salt. At the moment, we're looking at 131. That was at the end of 2015. So that is now another year has passed. The fourth quarter report is supposed to tell us now. From the 131 out of 169, has the department now moved either at 152, the 90%, or are they at 40%, 45%? I didn't get that report. And there's still 61 people, according to the records, that are additional staff. The current staff. So I'm not sure if how many people, if the full contingent have been employed, I'm not sure what has happened in the last few months. So if we can have an idea of where the vacancies really are, and when you have all this on the staff, it means that these people are paid by their own department, but they render a service in this department. So they are paid by that, and they're working here actually. So those people, we're looking at permanent staff that is going to do a job, and of course trying to get the best people now to be attracted to this department to do a better job in this department. So if we can just have some clarity on the staffing, the vacancy rate particularly 1 in 3,
because two is oversubscribed. There was 20, there's 21 people working there now. That's oversubscribed. And if there was a restructuring, the department did think about making certain changes, and that restructuring, if that's taken place, is then increased to the 169, and that has been submitted to DPSA or not for approval, because DPA has only approved 169 funded posts. The provincial offices also, their monies have been cut, so I don't know how the lease agreements took place and where the savings took place, because if you have a lease agreement, it escalates between 8 and 12% per annum, and it should increase. Here we find it's a decrease of about 10 million for provincial offices. So how many offices are really functional? How many offices are fitted out? How many offices have sufficient staff to deal with it? Were the military veterans in the provinces? Can we have an idea, and why was it cut by 10 million? Where was the saving actually made? The other one is there's an increase in consultants, but there's a decrease in travel and assistance. We are happy to hear that there's a decrease in travel and assistance, but if the traveling has been cut and it's not reaching the people, then I think it's cut for the wrong reason. If the travel and assistance is sustained and it's for using the employees or the officials to actually get out to the military base and get on the roadshow, then we appreciate the increase or the continuation of that allocation of money. At this moment, a huge saving, but I don't know if it's going to be effective in dealing with issues that this department has to deal with. The other one, Honorable Chair, is the registration of military vets. I think it's good to put it at 60 days, because for the past few years, I know it's been taking years, months, and there's nothing like weeks. So when I see 60 days, I hope this department has the capacity, because they've reduced the capacity with the database, and they say they can actually register people within 60 days comfortably. I don't know Mr. Robert is in the department, but he's giving us a real break. I'm getting very little, it takes very long for Mr. Robert to get back to us on a number of these cases. So, they have it up, and it's not 60 days. The other one, of course, is counseling is down, as I said, as a new target. It's not a new target. And I wondered what some others put as new targets. They were not new targets. We had the previous reports and coming in, and we had records of what was actually done. So the department mustn't conveniently put in new targets, or somebody's compiled it, and actually is reflected in previous reports. So that issues can be corrected. And if certain reports are late, they must report as late as not 100% they've been submitted on time. We know they've not been submitted on time, so just reflect it's been late. It's a historical fact, that's not going to change. So, it's just Honorable Chair, to put that in place. The last one is Honorable Chair. The housing, again, the numbers are a problem for me. The top up, 31.6 million, or 9 million, it's 1.9 million, that only equates to 409 houses. It does not equate to 1,000 houses. We've only delivered now 41, that's now English to 134 to date, that we just got the update right now. That's so far from 1,000. Have measures been put in place to monitor the SLAs with those housing departments or human settlement departments, that they actually executed? Because we're going to have more problems, we know what happened in KZN, and that's going to happen in other provinces soon. People are becoming intolerant, and people need to know, if they're on a waiting list, tell them when the house will come, because government has a waiting list, they can tell you how many schemes there are, how many houses they intend to build, and if the military which is part of that project. We also did not get the feedback of the military veterans running their own housing project as well, although that initiative was, in principle, considered by Minister Sisulu. So what happened to that particular initiative, and is that still under consideration that military veterans can actually build their own houses? The issue of Sunva, I would like to ask, I'm not going to agree of the only report that we have to discuss, but what I'd like to know is the SACC recognized, and are they an active member of Sunva? I know the organization has been formalized, I know that the president has been appointed and seen, but I have not seen a certificate of recognition for them to be able to access funds from the department to set up also programs for their particular promotion. So that has also caused them a problem, and I did not receive any report today. I have spoken to the minister and deputy minister responsible for the military base. As a final answer yet, although it's on the cards, I'd like to know what the update is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Mackey, you wanted to say something before we, Honorable Isau spoke.
Do with the questions that were addressed to the CFO. There's a part that maybe UCFO did not elaborate upon. As you had probably indicated, we contract with a service provider who provides a service, but whenever it is that maybe we now to pay, there is the issue of a bank service which is run by National Treasury to do the verification. Now at times you find that I mean, some of the service providers at the time when they are registering with us to be service providers, at a time when we have to now start paying them, that there are either issues like their tax matters are not in order. Now, because every payment is effected through the National Treasury system, we find that at the end of the day, then there is that lag. Hence, I think UCFO was correct in saying to want to say to ourselves that we will comply with 100% with the traffic reports is not just dependent upon having all the necessary paperwork internally in the department, but then dependent upon what happens when the system now starts talking to National Treasury, where you find that then the document only comes back and has to be corrected. It normally takes about 3 weeks before we receive it back from National Treasury, because this happened across all 37 departments. And that is one of the things that delays, and I think it's an appeal that we now need to put to the portfolio committee, that I mean, when you speak to your counterparts in the finance committee, to try and see how fast they can speed up this particular process of the turnaround in terms of, say, you know, this particular service providers, tax matters or whatever, or the bankers, I mean, account numbers have been changed. Because these are some of the things that we experience as a department. A person comes, we register them with a particular account. At the time when they are now coming back to us for payment, they change their account, especially when you are looking at the SMEs. And that creates a problem, because then you find that a particular account number is no more in existence, but a new one is in existence. So then they mean that the whole process now of registering again a credit provider takes another, turn on its own. And these are some of the things that are out of the control of officials in the department itself. And these are issues that I think at the end of the day, when CFO says, realistically, let's look at the 92% to 95%, we are now looking at these little gaps that we are not in control of when some of these things happen. That's what I wanted to communicate, sir. And then I think to then give Dr. Mahapa an opportunity as well, that to then start talking to the issue of the database, especially because of some of the matters that were coming out in terms of provision of most of the benefits lie within this branch as well. Dr. Mahapa, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Issau. Unfortunately, I had maybe a month and 2 weeks in the department, and then being in a very difficult position in case of dealing with military veterans, which is a tangible issue in this of measuring department performance. So now it means if my branch fails, it means the whole department is just going to fail. But the issue that we have prioritized is the issue of the database, because without a proper database, you can't be able to execute all the benefits. But we're giving it 100% to make sure that everything is delivered accordingly. We have even projectized it with time frames to say we need to analyze. When we indicated 7%, I think is a previous indication with regard to 37%. There's quite an improvement in case of dealing with the database. What I've done when I arrived is that I've written to all the formations within the SAMBA to indicate also the list and give them a PDF USB to say, this is the list of your members on the database. I want you to do the final verification with regard to META and give me a final certificate to indicate that you are certified, that all your members have been verified, they are part of the database, and then after we can file the certificate to say from APLA, NDA, we've got upper members that they are satisfied. And I indicated in the column, say, this is the members that we've got in the database, indicate what a progress that you've done in case of making sure the verification is done. And if there are some of the members that are not included, that is why I've made it a PDF, don't include them on the USB. Just indicate that these two members have been let out and we'll be able to follow the proper processes or making sure that product verification has been done. With the MKDA also we've done the same. Also with Azangla we've done the same. Also with other permissions that are supposed to be part of the process in case of that. So I need to be honest with that. The organizations or permissions are not responding in time. I think I've done it in March since I arrived, 29th March, and I gave them tools. But till now there is no response. But I had one-on-one in meeting with all the leaders, including MKDA, including Azangla, and also including ABLA, in case of analyzing the process of trying to clear the database. But we have done a parallel process. It was not one of the processes. Also, within that we have TSI, which is part of the mainstream in case of dealing with the database. Also, they are engaging those same information in case of analyzing as well as the database stream. But what we want to indicate is that even if we say 37%, there is no member within that 73,000 that we turn off in case of benefits. The members are still giving benefits. Even though we said the data is not a clear verified, but it's 73,000. So all of them are getting benefits. But the issue, our issue that in case of the benefits is the capacity that General Market indicated to say. In some of the benefits that we are supposed to give them, the process that we follow within the department that we should do verification with the national project is the one that delays the process of payments, which becomes a problem because each and every time when we pay, we've got what's called an entity form, which should be verified by the national treasury to say this account is printed, and then after that we'll be able to pay. That process, to be honest, it seems there's not enough capacity within national treasury. It includes all those transversal tenders in case of the payment, the 30 days payment, verification of each and every institution in case of making sure that the account is authentic. I don't think they'll be able to do that. So those things in case of the occasion support is where our invoices are stuck for the payment of the education support and also for the payment of some of the health support. But also to be honest, on the side of the National Reference with data, immediately when you open other opportunities, they come to those opportunities which create a problem in case of the process and the procedure that was set. And at the same time, we evaluate case merit by merit. What I mean is that since we said we started to pay also for private education, most of the military veterans are taking out their kids from the public school into the private school. And now in case of the verification, when coming to private school, is that the laws of the country, they indicate that your taxes as a school must be proper. All the documentation in case of the law must be there. But you know most of the schools are mushrooming. The veterans are not aware that this is a mushroom school. They take their kids there. When you demand the entity from the account number of the school for the payment of the fees, they refuse. They will indicate that provided the parent pay, you can pay the parent. And then officially according to our system, the invoice, so that we can go through the proper account system, because we should pay an institution, not private account, because we will find an AG findings where if you say you pay 73,000 of the military veterans privately in the account, it will create a problem. So also on that, the military veterans create a problem to us by migrating their kids from the public institution to a private institution, which are not properly registered, which does not have proper documentation in case of a legislation of the court. That also presents a problem in case of how do we deal with the matter. Also on the database issue is that most people, if they get it on public information that the data is not yet finalized, you will have the growing number of the remissions that are coming to the department that we are also made part of the process that we should be recognized. You indicated in terms of the SACs, which is still a political matter to be decided by the petitioners, are they recognized so that we are able to finalize the process. I had engagement with them also then demanded the certificate of recognition. But what he indicated is that if they become part of the Samba forest, it becomes easier because they can be gathered to say they are part of the process. Unlike one organization being given a certificate of recognition, it means we have to go to all the donations and give all those use of recognitions. We should be operating like a bargaining country, which creates a problem in case of dealing with the matter. Now, with regard to APLA, I had meetings also finalizing the list, so I realized there's APLA 1, there's APLA 2, which also creates a problem in case of dealing with the matter. All of them want recognition. And when I asked APLA 2 to say, but how does it come in an organization that we have APLA 2 and APLA 1? They went to the department to say, no, in case of their conferences, that they were also financed to hold that conference, which legitimized their standing as a body. But as a department, the structure that is recognized is led by General Speaker within Samba, is the one that is recognized in case of dealing with the Samba issue. So now those are the matters that create the issue of the government to be finalized. As other issues indicated also, if you can see also, with regard to that matter, we've got 359 on the database. Also, they think that there still are 1,000 outstanding of the members that should be part of the database. And the department also went all out to be able to do the verifications with the former DG available, so that we can be able to go to the three different training camps and see where were they trained, who are the leaders, whatever it might be. So, we have failed to be able to do that matter. But I think it's at a political level. The DM is dealing with that matter to say those 259 should be present to recognize. Are our things in matter as a written letter to Aganga to say, these are your members. If they are additional members, just give us the name so that also give us the process that you have followed in case of verification, and also give us the input of recognition to this member to say this is good standing a member of on the increase of health, we have talked to the branch of empowerment, case of empowerment, to say, let's try to identify the different the veterans in categories. There are those that need a high care in case of day-to-day monitoring, so that we take care of them while they're living, so that we don't take care of them during the burials. So what it indicated is that we are going to train 40 home-based care in case of making sure in each and every province we are going to have 10 home care, what you call agents, or can I call them learners, as we have discussed, so that they go and look and monitor those military veterans according to, I'm afraid to use the detachments, because other permissions are not used, the detachments. But according to those age groups, to say, in modern case, we know we've got so many military veterans, but we know 30 to 30 of them are at the age of 82 or 76 or 54. What is their status of health? Do they need three wives? Or do they need any other health? They were able to be able to give us a so that the military veterans would not phone us. Those home based care, they can be able to evaluate the situation each and every time. So that when we need to take action, immediately we can be able to take them to the hospital or indicate which proper care in case of the professionals that need to attend them in their home, so that we avoid the issue of them traveling. And then because more traveling, it becomes illness to them, which creates more sickness to them. We have introduced a system where the EDG also visit them in their home. Let Mr. Makau, who complains on the Alien Guardian, in case of the property, we went to his house just to check the conditions. But only to find out, when you find the complaint on the NG, it's so many complaints, but when you go to him, it's only two things that he can elaborate to say, this is what I need. He needs a proper wheelchair. The wheelchair was bought, but what he needs is that he's aging. He now needs a new one. He has made his own, to try to check the conditions. It amounts to 200 and something thousand. But as we indicated with regard to our health, there is no problems in case of indicating that. Over the bed, he also needs the best bed scanning to center, and also the supporting standard can be able to take into the wheelchair because he can't be carried, he's overweight. So those are the things that we have done. We also checked Mr. Javera in PE. We have seen there the conditions. We have also checked Mr. Gina also in PE, where his housing conditions are there. So now those are the things that are assist so that we can be able to pass back in issue of dealing with the military events issue. In terms of the improvement in education, I can say it's only minimum of 10% that are reported to say the education support, also that if are not paid, because of that verification process of the national treasury, which is creating a lot of time with regard to dealing with those matters. But other systems that we are putting in place, it will be able to reflect and indicate how we move forward. We are engaged in an IT process to be able to procure a company. That will be able to indicate through SMS, it will indicate through the email, it will also indicate through the radios to the members, as to indicate what are the benefits within the DMT, how do you access the benefits, what forms are needed to be able to do that matter. So now, the issue now that we are having is that we are engaging with the ECIS as a regulation within the, I don't say the directive, not the regulation. You see, anything with regard to the communication will be done through the ECIS. We are in the process, we are finalizing the SLA, the GIS, so that we can be able to go in the media through their system to make sure that we are reaching all the military veterans, and then at the end of the day, all of them are able to get any information about accessing to that information. We are aware that military veterans, most of them are far from the reach, but we think that we have identified most what I can call a daily gun, because it touches most of the witchcraft. And people, when they are aging, they want to read more about the witchcraft, of which they'll be able to get that information about all the benefits of the military veterans. If the newspaper that we have identified, that number of them are able, also their facilities, I mean it's 120, they can be able to access that. We will be able to identify also within our offices that if we get better of the daily staff, we can also try and need to talk to the daily staff to get three copies since we're going to advertise to them to say they can be distributed at this place, just like at the airport, where you get the three copies, so that military guests can be able to get such copies and be able to access. So also, when we talk about the increase all on the health, we also want medical facilities all over the provinces, because we are engaging it. You see, it is basically medical facilities that are used to make sure that military veterans are in access on that matter. Also, this access health is on my side, but welcoming to facilities is on the empowerment side that are dealing with that. So we are working together to make sure that those facilities are available. We've been engaging with Surgeon General of France on Friday about the matter, and we have three options in place. The first option is that because AMSCO has got capacity, can they be able to assist us in making sure that they quickly give us the process that they are going to follow in case of building these medical facilities. And also, we have looked also at engaging some of the previous office to make sure that don't they have some of the office space and also Department of Public Works that is not utilized, that we can be able to utilize it as part of the facilities for the medical care. On the housing issue, we have moved, when I arrived with a backlog of files, and the CFO can indicate that I think more than 80 to 75 have been signed to make sure that they get access to housing. The issue that we have most of the time is where we have a house in distress, where you find military veterans in areas in case of paying the bond, and the system that we have been following where we say, let's wait for the house to be in distress. We are now changing that as ESCO so that we should not find an AG funding, because if we say the house is in distress, it's where you wait for a person, for the lawyers to write a letter, for the lawyers to phone, because if the lawyer phones, one phone call is 490 just for him to phone him. And if they write a letter, the letter will cost 3,005 and it will be part of the cost when they say these are the legal costs that we demand from you. So now let's change the system. If the military veteran says my house is in areas, let's intervene and make sure that the house is big because it will be in line with the regulation, section 14 of the regulation, where it says if the minister of veterans is earning less than 125, he should be released. And he should be released once. The minister of veterans should not have two houses. So if that option is there, that he is released once, I mean, we know that with assisted him, we are no longer going to the problem. So the issue of talking about the distress, waiting for a lawyer, I think it's not a good way that we are going to, we are trying to change the system. But on the side, other right we are having, a lot of military veterans, where you find the house is more than 175,000. Even if the house is 400,000, the saving house is a million. The house now is accumulating areas, and now the department is saying we should at least assist when it's within that levels. Also to ourselves, when we discuss the department to say, it creates a problem. Let's get a new system of trying to deal with this mess. Because even if you've got a house of 450, but you are sitting for 175, the other, he can commit himself, how is he going to be? Unless we wait for the house to be taken, and then we come back and say, we can only build a house for you for 175,000. It creates a problem. So now, those are the systems that we are trying to introduce so that we can be able to fast track the issue of the benefits for the military, one called veterans. On the FRD, or that you have asked to say, others seem to receive the grossers, but up to 4.5 is now 5, is that we have introduced a new FRD system. We have tried to finalize the memorandum with SASA, but the issue was that the payment should be to the third party, because SASA has contracted CPS, and for us to be able to account, in case of the better accounting principle, it was going to be an accounting query that you pay a subcontractor directly from our department, because we were saying, let's pay SASA directly, but SASA was saying, no, you can pay CPS. Of which, in case of the discussion, it has now fallen apart, it has just fallen down. But we were able to negotiate with APSA to say how can we assist in case of making sure that the military veterans are getting this benefit. They give us the option, the cashless option, and those that are also having what you call the account with that. So the agreement was signed, it was signed by the accounting office on Friday. So this week we are starting to dispense that amount of money. We were saying that if you give them vouchers, some of them were selling the vouchers just for the sake of money. But we have decided to say, we can't, issuing that benefit for a good person. It's better to give them that at first money. If they get their 1,200, we know in their records that they receive this amount of money. What they've done with the money is according to them will indicate that this amount of money that we are support. According to the number that we have is 1,895 that are going to benefit out of that process. The pension issue, we are going to finalize it. After we finalize the database, we'll be able to pilot the issue of the pension. But what we're going to do, because we're saying the database is not yet finalized, but we are saying those who are receiving the SRD now that are in the database, we are going to elevate them into that piloting of the pension so that they are no longer going to receive that relief. They now receive the pension. After we have piloted the pension, we know that we'll be able to apply to the National Treasury to get more funds so that we can be able to cover all those military veterans that are in need of pension. That will be able to be finalized. But since we have started with the process, this one of the FRD will assist us to elevate them from the FRD process into a pension fund, which will be a legitimate process that we can be able to account on. On the 60 days, we are trying to be realistic, because we are saying, on the road shows, there is no need to send the politicians only on the road shows, where they are going to talk about the military veterans. We are all going to take the office, they go there with the gazebos. Make sure that all the military veterans that are having the problem, they can be able to access those issues that they raise within that road shows. If we are in Northern Cape, we are going to have the education department sitting in the gazebo. We have the health system department sitting in the gazebo. We also have the database sitting in their gazebo. The skills development will sit in their gazebo. Empowerment, basic, and everything will sit there. We'll take our sisters from the department. That will be able to deal with those issues. If there's a complaint of the database, officials will be able to deal with them there. If there's a problem with regard to education support, they'll be able to deal with that. Because we realize that the project, the coordinators within the departments are overwhelmed. And also to engage the honorable SR investor. The politics of the provinces most of the time disturb the performance of the department. Because we find the coordinator, but other provinces don't want to recognize it. They don't want to provide the funding. Also the Samba issue, in case of dealing with some of the political matters that can accelerate service delivery, is also a problem that we need to deal with as part of our stakeholders to see how to manage those dollars. That is said, CPDs can be realistic if we are going to do the ratios that way and try to implement the monitoring and evaluation as part of the project, you see. If you say the project, for how long it will take, with the date, and at the same time, how are we going to monitor it, and also be able to give a partial report with regard to that matter, it will be able to assist us to make sure that we report the issues accordingly. I think if I left something, my colleagues will be able to assist them. Thank you.
Mr. Murray?
There was one part which we felt that we give to Mr. Matthews. The issues that were raised by Honorable himself on the legislative amendments and our regulations. So I'll just pass on to him for a 50 and hopefully we'll be wrapping up in terms of some of the matters that have been raised. Thank you. Thank you very much. The big points will be the turnaround that is the Honorable Hassan started with, and then the amendments to the legislation. Do pardon me, I've got a bit of fear. Then in passing, because there doesn't seem to be information, the public transport issue that Honorable Hassan raised, and the issue of staffing, just 1, 2, 3, 4. Turnaround team has always been ready to present to the procurement committee and to the joint standing committee. However, they have always been rescheduling due to many of the activities that have happened. Because if you look at the latest presentation as planned, it's a presentation of the 8th of April, and that date changed, so we are ready to engage. We were also ready to take on the invitation that was indicated at the last portfolio committee of interfacing with the portfolio committee on the road shows, because that then gives an opportunity for the portfolio committee members to see on the ground what is actually happening. And then our team is integrated with the management. Secondly, the issue of amendments to the Act. Honourable Member asked the question why change the legislation, though I think Honourable Member later indicated that yes, there is a need to change or to amend the legislation from a certain point of view, but let's just say comprehensively what is the purpose. The purpose is just to propose a consolidated and clearly defined legislative framework, because there are a number of acts that impact on the life of a military veteran, and this needs to be coordinated. I'll just run them through. There's the Defense Act, there's the Military Veterans Act, there is the Demobilization Act, there is the Special Pensions Act, there is the Military Pensions Act, and there is the Special Pensions Act as amended, there is the Social Assistance Act, there is the Social Housing Act, there is also a South African Citizens Act. So these were enacted, I wouldn't say in a disjointed manner, as if it could have been done otherwise, but now that the Department of Military Services is there to focus on this constituency, there is a need to look at what synergies can be derived in tweaking either the Act or in shaping it. And there is a fully fledged proposal that will be shared with the Portfolio Committee at presentation. And Honorable Essa also indicated in his misgivings and perhaps a logical, valid observation, but look at it this way, because there is a conundrum there. The situation now is, like, if a military veteran's family is involved in an accident, let's say, and the health benefits that are only vested in the primary member, it would actually mean that a helicopter or ambulance would come and only attend the beneficiary, the primary member. Even, and you can stretch it to say, even if the wife or one of the children is in a much more serious and critical condition, currently nothing can be done about it. And if the primary member has maybe sprained or broken an arm, attention would be. But what does that say? It speaks to a flawed model. But one is not going to go into it. Because what actually happens now is that these benefits are parceled out at the time only of the incident, rather than seeing a situation whereby even some of the benefits can be capitalized. I mean, we have got to make an aid approach as an example. And the same would apply to the burial, because the burial is like 25,000 or so that is taken out at the time of death. But you can then very well ask the question, what could you have done with the 25,000 of each of the members? So that's the approach. And then that was the second point. The third point on public transport, the MOU, from where we sit, we have actually seen the draft MOU between the Department of Military Veterans as well as the Department of Transport. And in fact, a member of the team has participated in that. And a number of the entities of the Department of Transport, from your Metrorail to your South African Maritime Authority and so on, all those are subscribed to that MOU so as to give transport assistance to military vessels. So there has been a fair deal of work done there. All that is needed now is for the two ministers to append the signatures to that, maybe after a short discussion. And then lastly, Honorable Member may have seen on Sunday, in the Sunday papers, it was in the Sunday Independent, it was in the Sunday World, as well as in the Sunday Sun, a number of adverts come out there. Probably the number is about, what, over 10, 12? Yes, 12. That addresses now the staffing issue. Chief directors, directors, assistant directors, and so on. And that speaks to the injected capacity that's coming through, as the Honourable Member had asked. And this is falls within the permanent cohort of employees. That's those 4 points. The turnaround, which was the first one, amendment, second one, public transport, which was the third one, and as well as the permanent staff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sure you have exhausted all the questions. Then what we should also do on payment, Mr. Mark, is that the 30 days payment. I think yourself as a department, you must do what you are supposed to do within that period, so that when you come here and complain about other departments, they must not come to know, even themselves, not comply. So you comply, and so that you should be able to define the real problem. Dr. Mahaba, I was of the impression that the political intervention that is needed with the SACCMV is about integration. But in terms of the, as to whether they are military veterans or not, that's the definition not cover them. So the definition covers them. Yeah, it covers them. So we must identify the real problem, which means political intervention. Well, that matter, indeed, they will sort it out with the minister as the court had decided. And the internal audit, I'm just checking, Manisco, in terms of corporate governance, where you get personnel for internal audit? You said there are two or three? Where, from where do you get them?
Chairperson, in terms of our appointment, the members are mainly from the other departments as part of the internal audit of other departments as part of promotion.
Other department, what do you mean?
What is coming from SAPS?
Well, they are external from the department.
He is external, but yeah. Appointed as permanent.
It's
promotion within government.
It's very awkward. What informs that? What legislation do you use? What policy when you appoint internal audit?
In accordance with the Public Service Act, and as I'm indicating, when you talk about internal, it's internal within government. External, when it's auditors outside, when they're coming from the private sector. So these are public servants within government.
Thanks. I think we have exhausted everything, honorable members. You've got a last question.
No. The question calls on the chair about the internal audit. There's an increase in money. So we wanted to know, just for promotion, not for increasing salary.
When
I
appoint,
it's
part of increasing
staff within the department of the office. When I'm saying promotion, they're coming from lower level and then it's promotion to director level.
Yes.
Assistant director, head assistant director levels, and then promotion when they are coming from the public service environment.
Oh, which means that you can, if you are not at a certain level, you cannot serve in the internal audit. You should be a deputy director first or something like that. Is it a rule, a policy, or what?
Many in terms of the levels. When you are as an internal auditor, you are a junior person. Mm-hmm. And when you are an assistant director, it's a supervisory level. And when we say the promotion, you are now coming to a managerial position where you'll be responsible to assist. Mm-hmm. As supervision and managing and ensuring that you have staff complement within your environment. The challenge is that in terms of the structure, it's only allowed to have only three members. So our strategy needs to be reviewed.
Is enough capacity? Is that enough capacity?
No, we don't have enough capacity. We're sitting at levels of DP directors who don't have other levels to manage and the challenge as usual. And we need to have two soldiers who be able to assist us in ensuring that we execute our mandate accordingly.
No, what would do? We are intending to have a static review workshop, you remember, honorable members. And then one of the issues which should be presented there will be the turnaround strategy. And Dr. Mahaba, about the patient, the patient strategy you were talking about, I think going forward we'd like you to give us a full presentation about only on that matter, especially when we're doing our strategic review. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, the department. We hope next time when you come here, we'll be clapping hands for you. The meeting is adjourned. Yeah, David. Okay.